CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, folks. And we don't have a full studio today. We have Lawrence. How's it, Lawrence?
Howdy.
And we have Wandile.
In the house.
In the house. Wandile and his
a rather empty house, am I?
Yeah.
And his sideways headphones.
Stand up for seizure. It's part of my look now.
It's part of your look. Yeah. It's part of your look. Well, how are you guys? How was your weekend?
Yeah, mine was great. I was at the M-Fest, so I got to drive some performance BMWs. And that was the first time for me driving a hybrid, so that was really exciting.
Which hybrid did you run?
The i8.
The i8?
Yeah, for the first time, yeah.
It's a wicked piece of machinery.
No, it is. I think it's a little underpowered, but the fantastic all-around experience you get from it is just amazing.
Well, we'll talk about it a little bit later on, but BMW has kindly let me drive a BMW i3 for the week, and I'm not going to spoil it right now, but I'll tell you all about it during the segment. So I suppose let's get right into it. And first story in the news, which comes as a bit of a surprise, to be honest with you, a 14-year-old crashes a stolen car. Now, the first thing I wondered when I read this piece was, how on earth did this 14-year-old, in the first place, steal the car?
Yeah, I mean, the keys off the nightstand.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I mean, when I was 14, I wanted to drive, so I can empathize. You know, I wouldn't go as far as stealing, but...
Well, I mean, I think most teenagers...
borrowed mommy's car.
Borrowed mommy's car. But this 14-year-old in Australia had a lot of explaining to do when he stole a Subaru Forester and crashed it into a Lamborghini Urus.
Now, that's just
SUV.
Bad luck. Wrong time.
The police were looking for the Subaru Forester, saw it in the driveway of a residential house, pulled in behind it, and the thief didn't think that this was a good idea. Reversed, bumped the double cab Toyota Hilux Bucky out of the way, sped away, and then proceeded to crash into a Lamborghini.
A 3.9 million rand Lamborghini.
Somebody's going to jail. Somebody's never going to get his driver's license ever.
Do you go to jail at 14 years old? I don't think that's the... What happens? What happens when you're 14 years old and
released into the care of his now very angry parents, I would imagine. And then, not allowed to take his learners, not allowed to take his drivers. License suspended before he even had it.
Yeah.
All of the above. Yeah. I mean, at 14 years old, what do you know when you're 14? We were just talking about age before the show started. Yeah. You know, what do you know when you're 25? You know, so 10, 11 years before that, who knows? Who knows?
Not much, yeah.
Not much. But nonetheless, he's got a lot of explaining to do. And this beautiful yellow Lamborghini Urus is buggered. It's absolutely buggered.
Yeah.
And don't even want to know what the insurance excess on that is.
Well, 3.9 million rand car, I'm wondering. Like, would you want this sports car repaired? I don't know.
Look, if it was my car, I would, please, can somebody pay?
I have it on pretty good authority that most guys that drive really expensive Italian sports cars don't insure them. Because the insurance is more than what the car... monthly insurance on one of those is something stupid. So if they've got the money to buy one of those, they basically, if it gets smashed, they just...
I actually spoke to an insurer who told me that most people who drive these supercars insure them only on specific days.
Yeah.
So they drive them like on a Sunday and then insure them just for that day. So if something goes wrong on another day...
So it's parked in your garage.
Yeah.
Some idiot in a Subaru Forester who doesn't have a license drives through your garage and smashes your lovely... Yeah. Enough said.
It's problematic.
Well, moving on to things a lot friendlier but less exciting. It might be exciting, though, but Volvo is offering free electricity on their plug-in hybrid buyers in South Africa. Seems like a worldwide thing, though, but the Swedish company is showing that it is even prepared to sweeten this deal and buy the vehicles with charge when you buy the vehicle with a charge socket. And part of this global initiative, because not only in South Africa, Volvo will partially refund the electricity bills of those who buy its plug-in hybrid vehicle, which is now in the XC90. And I'm sure it's going to come to the XC60 and XC40. But giving free electricity for, well, only for a year. I mean, I would imagine it.
And they have to be able to prove that the electricity that actually went into the car. It is the provisos and then the fine print on the bottom of that little agreement are quite extensive.
Well, I mean, I don't know about this new hybrid XC90, but shouldn't the car be able to tell?
I think it does. Doesn't it tell you? Doesn't it on the app also? I think you can see how much consumption or how much electricity is actually going into the vehicle. So
and when you charge it, what the charge cycles are like. But I suppose when you charge it, you have to prove what the bill was. And bills, and bills for electricity differ depending on the day, time of charge, location, all that stuff. So
I think it's amazing regardless, though. I think it's a great incentive that these OEMs are starting to give to people. Especially to push the whole hybrid and electric vehicles into the consumer market, I think it's a great move.
Well, I mean, Volvo is the only plug-in hybrid available in South Africa in the XC90 model, and priced from about 1.276 million rand. Crickets.
Yeah, that changes things.
It does change things. So apparently, this initiative is going to be launched on other variants like the XC40, and hopefully that is confirmed for South Africa soon, because a year's worth of electricity in South Africa, well, I think that's priceless.
Yeah, give me the electricity first in South Africa.
Well, the official measurement will only start in May 2020, but in order to qualify, clients will have to be will be required to keep the car for a full year. So you can't go and sell your car within that year, because otherwise I think something happens to your agreement. So spend 1.2 million rand and get a year's worth of electricity, or partial electricity free on the XC90. Now here's an exciting story. The all new VW Golf 8.
Finally.
Yep.
Finally.
I sat on, was it Thursday night?
Yeah.
And I watched the live global reveal on YouTube.
Yeah.
I wrote an article about it. Post that. It's up on site if you want to go and read. And I was a little underwhelmed, to be perfectly
really?
Honest. It looks
my heart.
If you look there, I looked at the two side by side pictures, and I think there's a little bit of Audi DNA starting to flow sideways there.
Well, don't you think the light front signatures looks like a little bit like the Scirocco?
Yes, there's a lot of LED from the lighting signatures, because that was Audi's thing.
But that's everybody's thing now. It's not really Audi's thing anymore, right?
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying. I looked at the car and I'm like, well, this is, it just looks like the 7.5. There's really not, you just change the headlights and the bumpers, but it's, there's not much. And then I saw the inside of the car and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Now that's where they've made the changes.
Well, that apparently there are some big changes to the interior of the car, and they've modernized it, for lack of a better term, and made it look a little bit like an electric vehicle.
So yeah, you have there's two big screens. So there's the innovation cockpit, which is standard in the driver's binnacle, and you have the giant infotainment screen, which are both angled towards the driver, and you get heads-up display as standard. The biggest thing for me, there is no gear selector.
Oh,
there's a toggle switch.
Yeah,
you push it forward to go forward, pull it back to go backwards, neutral. That's it. There's no gear selector. The dashboard is sort of segmented, is layered, so that looks pretty cool. But it's the technology that they push on there. So there are things like this Car 2X, which basically, if you're sitting there and you're pumping the Harman Kardon sound system, you're listening to your tunes, and you can't hear the ambulance coming up behind you, this thing switches
it off,
and it sets off alarms inside the car. There's an ambulance coming, move out of the way.
Yeah.
You're being a jerk.
Is that standard tech, or is it?
Yeah.
Well,
oh, wow.
The thing is, though, everything that they showed us and that we've seen, and all of the stuff that we've been told about, is only for what we now know for the European market. So they start pre-sale in December for Germany only. January, February, European rollout starts. So Spain, all of those other countries.
When do we get love?
End of next year.
Middle to end of next year, and we're only getting three models. out of the 7 or 8 that they were telling us about with all the engine derivatives and these plug-in hybrids and this electric and everything, we're getting the 1.4 TSI, the 2-liter, and a Golf R.
We're not getting the plug-in hybrid?
Not as far as I can tell. Yeah.
No, now I have just been officially disappointed.
And that is why I'm saying, I was like a little bit, I was like, yeah, we're getting all these really cool engines and, you know, powertrain derivatives and the electric, the hybrid-assisted engines. And then when I actually spoke to VW South Africa, they were like, yeah, no, for now, we can officially confirm that we're getting the 1.4 TSI, the 2-liter GTI, and the Golf
R. Is that to do with the tooling and the manufacturing plant?
Or the I don't know. I just think it has a lot to do with our local... because remember last year we had this...
What's the style though?
Think about this for a second, right? The assembly plants to assemble an electric or hybrid vehicle... wouldn't it have to change significantly? There would have to be some big investment in order to change an assembly plant to be able to assemble a hybrid vehicle.
Yeah, now you look at the ID3, yeah, which is the full electric Golf, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
It's what's going to replace the Golf in by 2030.
I think that's why they're not rolling it out everywhere.
The Golf 8 that we're getting now is it. It's the last Golf. The next... iteration of the
will be electric.
It's going to be the ID3.
Yeah.
They were supposed to launch Golf 8 at Frankfurt Motor Show where they launched ID3, and they said, "Oh, okay, we don't want to pull away from the ID3's Uber."
Yeah.
So let's just keep the Golf 8 back, and we'll do a proper global reveal for that. Like I said in my article, this is probably the last petrol powered Golf.
But I mean that goes for most vehicles. So we're fast hurtling down the road to electric, full electric vehicles, and most manufacturers are starting to put their money where their mouth is and put a deadline on when electric vehicles will be the only thing they manufacture. And VW is no different. You know, I think VW was actually one of the first manufacturers to put the gauntlet down in terms of, I can't remember the exact year, but
yeah, also they got their knuckles wrapped for
the
dieselgating.
Well, I mean, whether there's a link there or not, who knows, but the fact of the matter is they came to the party, one of the first that came to the party to say, we will not produce any internal combustion engine cars from X date. And so here's the challenge. Again, I'll come back to the scenario where if we don't adopt electric vehicles in this country, so we've got the charging infrastructure, yes it needs upgrades, and yes we need superchargers, and yes we need a network upgrade and all that stuff, but at least there's infrastructure, so every 200 k's at least on every highway there's charging points. Might take you 3 days to get to Cape Town, but nonetheless there is charging infrastructure. But where are the cars? And here's another example of that that adoption curve just getting squashed.
I don't know, because back on the point of the ID3, when you look at where it's going to be priced, I think
it's Golf territory.
It's Golf territory. So I think it's a slow transition, but once we get there, it's going to be readily available.
No, where's the transition? There's no hybrids coming.
I think this is not VW South Africa's fault.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I
think
I agree
this is
with
VW
that.
Global saying
yes.
Germany gets it first, then Europe.
No.
America.
I don't know if it's even a decision like that, is it? I mean, is it not got to do with our ability to assemble the car? You know, the other alternative is import the car, and if we start to import cars, isn't the import duty
well,
higher?
These will be the imports.
Also our market.
The Golf 8 is
a full import.
Yeah, so well, things like the Golf R. That's
okay.
Imported. That's so not manufactured locally.
Right, so then the difference between that import and an electric import is the import tax.
Yeah.
So those things could be at play that are stopping our adoption and not necessarily VW not wanting to bring the car into the country. I'm pretty sure they do.
Yeah. This is what happened with the Golf R. There were two versions of the Golf R, and we only got the lower powered version. And when we asked why we couldn't have the higher powered one, we were told, no, your fuel is too bad. So, and then wham bam, 6 months later, car's being delivered. They changed their minds at the last minute. And that's why I said, tentatively, we're only getting 3 months.
You're a conspiracy theorist.
No, because they're telling us now, just to whet the appetite, these are the ones you guys are going to
I don't know.
And then you'll see.
I think
next year, June, July, we'll get the message. Oh, yes, you know, there's hybrid assisted. Yes, you'll be getting this version and that version. You're not getting the full 7 engine lineup, but we'll
I'm not sure we're ready for it.
Also, I think we thing. Are. I remember, don't these think are hybrid assisted. So yeah. it's a 48 volt battery that just assists the engine. We have hybrid assisted engines already in the country.
Are these not full on plug-in hybrids on the
list?
No.
They are petrol and diesel engine cars with a hybrid assist.
Well, then we don't want them.
Ah, yes, we do.
No, we don't.
Because it's baby steps.
We want electric cars. Volvo is leading the charge here. And so, Jaguar.
So anyway, this is...
Yeah,
this
1.2
is,
though, you know.
I sit there,
yes,
and
exactly.
I look at...
we need an affordable one.
We haven't been told what the Golf 8 is going to cost.
Mm. Yeah.
We don't know exactly when it's arriving, but we know that we are going to get it, and we are only going to get a few derivatives thereof.
Well, whatever. I'm the ever optimist. I'm thinking VW wants to bring the car here, and there are things in their way. Let's get those things out of their way and bring electric cars to South Africa. That's what I say. Bring electric cars to South Africa. Where are the flipping cars? So, a car from yesteryear, Nissan, who used to be Datsun. I think Nissan bought the Datsun brand, as a matter of fact, but Nissan is likely to ditch the Datsun brand. Now, a little story. I think this was in the early 1980s, and I pulled up a picture of the car earlier on, or should I say yesterday. And in the early 1980s, I think it was 1980, 1981, I must have been about a couple of years old, maybe 7 or 8 years old, my grandmother had a powder blue Datsun 120Y.
They were really good looking cars. I'm not sure if it was like a sports version.
All you need to do
Nissan,
is take a weekend excursion out to the East Rand.
What's the East Rand got to do with the
East Rand
120Ys?
Every episode.
Because every second driveway has got one.
A 120Y.
120Ys. Datsuns are still very, very popular, and those cars are still running.
Well, the Datsun 120Y, called the B210 series, was manufactured between 1975 and 1980. And then between 1975 and 1980, they also had the 140Y and the 160Y in that same series. And I got good memories of this car, to be honest. But Nissan is reportedly going to ditch the Datsun brand. I wonder why.
So, globally... From a global perspective,
I mean, this thing's got legacy.
The Datsun,
it's like a flipping Mustang, right?
But who's buying a Datsun anymore?
Globally,
when there's Nissan,
Datsun and Nissan are basically the same company, and they're fighting
within the same markets,
in the same space for the same customers. The Datsun brand itself is not doing as well, so Nissan has said, okay, well, look, we're going to start dialing it back a bit. I can't see us ditching the Datsun brand locally for at least another 2 to 3 years.
Well, I mean that
in
goes
2 weeks' time, I'm on a launch for the new Datsun Go CVT, which tells you they're still launching new models. Mm. So I don't think locally we're going to see the brand completely disappear overnight.
Well, we're behind the launch curve, right?
Mm. But globally, they might... because I read the article, and they're talking about shutting down factories in India and in China and in the US. There's no mention of Africa.
Hmm.
And this is all to dial back old Hussein's plan, because he was on a massive drive to expand, and then got himself into a whole bunch of trouble, and the board has said, okay, we're just going to dial that back down to 5 again.
Well, I think it'll be a sad day in the world and in South Africa.
Yes, because people
not
love the Datsun.
The smallest of the problems is that I've got good memories of the 120Y. So East Rand aside.
Datsun disappeared for the better part of 15 years, and they brought it back. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've got a really good memory with my grandmother's car, where we were at my aunt's house, and this little powder blue Datsun 120Y, still almost brand new, got in the car, and it had lap seat belts, no over the shoulder seat belts, still lap seat belts in those days, and I must have been, you know, single digits of age. Get in the passenger side of the car, and it was raining, and we had to get home and switch on the windscreen wipers, and the driver windscreen wiper wasn't working, it was only the passenger one. So I was quite proud that, you know, we had to drive all the way home. I was the navigator.
Oh, I thought she was going to make you hang out the window and manually wipe it.
It was on her side, so I couldn't do that. I'd love to have, driven the car or hung out the window or done all those things that nine-year-olds want to do, but I couldn't. Then the next story, 10 most popular second-hand double cab buckies under 450,000 rand. Now, we all know that South Africa is a bucky nation, and we seem to be absolutely bucky mad. But on the top 10 list, guess who trumps everybody else? And I suppose the two
Hilux.
The two models that keep going head to head in terms of models is Ford Ranger and Toyota Hilux. But in terms of variants actually sold, the Ford Ranger beats Hilux, unfortunately. Third is Isuzu KB. Third variant, also Ford Ranger 3.2 double cab. Ford seems to take all three of the top slots. In terms of variant, and the Nissan NP300 hard body. I wonder where that's going to go. And fifth is VW Amarok, with six Mazda BT50, seventh Isuzu D-Max, and eighth Mitsubishi Triton, ninth GWN Steed 5, and 10 Tata Xenon. And this is based on search data on autotrader.co.za, some most popular models sold over the last little while. And what's interesting for me is that Toyota Hilux only takes 6th and 7th spot with the Toyota Hilux 2.8 GD and the 3-litre D, both double cab Raiders. So we seem to love our double cabs, but Ford occupies 1, 2, 3, 4 of the top 10 slots, almost 50%, well, 40% of the top 10 slots in terms of variants sold year to date. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I think also having the, because what, the D-Max was previously the KB, yeah? And it's there twice as the KB and the D-Max. So you can see that the D-Max is really coming up. And if you had to buckle the Isuzu KB numbers and the D-Max numbers, you know, you would maybe see a different story. But, yeah, I think South Africans still love Isuzus regardless.
Yeah, I mean, the Isuzu Bucky has traditionally been, I mean, I suppose Lawrence will be able to tell us more than anyone else, but Isuzu, Toyota Hilux, Ford Ranger, those seem to be the three Buckies South Africans love.
It is, and it's also regional, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll find down in the Cape, Ford reigns supreme. Up here in Joburg, it's Hilux. Mm. Down in the Free State, it's Isuzu.
Where's the Amarok?
Durban. Believe it or not, dude.
What is that? What has Durban got to do with the Amarok?
This is where the, you know, it's the popular. You go to what's it, Nampo?
Yeah, yeah.
Down in the Free State, and it's Isuzu's everywhere.
Mm.
You do not see a Ford, or and the guys will tell you, don't bring that thing here.
Don't bring it here.
It's Isuzu, you know. And you come here to Pretoria, and it's Hiluxes everywhere, and then you know. Go down Cape Town, and it's
a different story.
Every wine farm has a Ranger.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that is Bucky Nation for you, and we are it. But when it comes to sedans, in quarter three of 2019, what are the most popular sedans? And very quickly, VW Polo still tops the list, with number two coming in with the Toyota Yaris, and Hyundai Grand i10 coming in third, Kia Picanto fourth, Ford Figo fifth, Toyota Etios sixth, Suzuki Swift 7th, and the VW Up 8th with the Renault Kwid 9th, and guess what comes in 10th? The one that's got it on the chopping block, the Datsun Go.
Ah, yeah, I see. That paints a different story. I didn't know that, so this is...
It's interesting.
That changes my perspective.
Well, that goes down to what Lauren said a little bit earlier on, and that is maybe South Africa will hang on to the Datsun a little bit longer than what everybody else will because of the popularity of the actual brand itself.
That, and when you consider that Kwid and Go are direct competitors, and the Kwid actually has that section of the market pretty much
sewn up.
These guys are... They're battling backwards and forwards on a month-to-month basis.
Well, that being said, let's get into our Auto Talk segment. And today we have Lawrence in studio, and he's going to be giving us a review of the BMW X4 M40D. All yours, Lawrence.
All right. I want to start off by saying that I never really use the word perfect all that often. But the X4 is probably the one that's the closest too perfect that I've driven this year.
Of any car?
Of any car.
Wow.
This thing, it is one of those vehicles where you get in and everything is just right.
Mm.
I want to start off with my only gripe, and that is I don't like the way it looks. It's ugly.
It looks weird.
I don't know what it is with the German automakers that feel that making a four-door coupe is a good idea. It just looks wrong. When you're talking about design and the flow of lines and stuff like that, the perspective of is everything. You know, when the car sort of flows, you know, like a beautiful line, and then all of a sudden it just...
But doesn't it look like a little X6?
It is. It's the X2, X4, and X6. Mm. These are the SUV versions of the 2 Series, 4 Series, and 6 Series. But those cars all only have two doors.
Mm.
Now you slap an extra set of doors and try and make it look like a two-door, and it just looks wrong. So that's my only gripe with the vehicle, is it just looks wrong. And it, you know, you look at the space in the wheel wells is off, and the way the bumper stops, it looks weird. So X2, X4, and X6 all suffer from the same problem. Mm. The cars just look wrong in their design. It just looks unfinished.
Mm. So how's it perfect then?
When you get in and drive it.
So two cars, you've said you like the interior more than the exterior. One was the VW GTI, which you've got from images, and this one you've actually experienced, and the internal, or should I say interior of the car, trumps everything else.
Pretty much. Where do you spend all the time when you're in a car? Inside. You don't drive it from the outside.
Well, unless it's a getaway car.
So yeah. So you're driving the car, you open up the door.
Or you're a police officer on the bonnet.
Welcome to Krugersdorp. So you open the door. Black leather, red stitching, this beautiful dark grey wood paneling, brushed aluminium, piano black. It's a stunning interior, and it's a really nice car. Now, one of the biggest problems that I have with the BMW is you get in and you spend about 30 minutes adjusting the seat and the steering wheel and everything, trying to find your comfortable driving position. This is the first BMW that I've got into, and all I did was pull the steering wheel towards me. It was perfect. Snug.
Yeah.
And it's so comfortable. Then we get to the drivetrain and the engine. Now, usually these are the places where motoring journalists sit there and we nitpick. The engine's too noisy, or there's a bit rattly, or the gear shift was wrong, or whatever. The power delivery, the way this thing changed gears, it was perfect. It had just the right amount of power for its size, so it wasn't overpowered or underpowered. I don't even know how many gears. I think it's an 8-speed tiptronic, but you don't know what gear you're in because the gear shifts are that seamless. It just changes, and you're like, okay, did it change gear? Am I driving? And it's just that brilliant. Just as the whole package, I sat there and I went, wow. This is, and I mean, you look at the other X4, I think it was the 30.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't believe that this is the same model. The M40D is just, I don't know, and it just, all the options and everything were just...
A cut above the rest.
It was the perfectly spec'd. And that's why I said it's close to perfection. If it wasn't for the fact that the car was so damn ugly, I would say
on the outside,
this is my driver of the year.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is where I
would take my money and go to BMW and say, right, I want that car.
So it's got a nice
that red one with that spec and all of those options
over the X5.
Yes.
Wow. That's a lot.
Like I said, if it wasn't so damn ugly, I still won't spend my money on it because I don't like the way it looks from the outside. Unfortunately, that's just it's subjective. That's my opinion because there are plenty of people who absolutely love the X2, X4, and X6 styling.
Well, I mean, the thing is, this particular shape has been around for how long? This particular kind of
it's been five, six years.
Been around for a very, very long time, and you know, BMW. In days gone by, used to change the shape of the car very, very often.
Yeah.
Does it actually look like that's happening with many cars nowadays? It's starting to slow down. The shape change seems to be slowing down.
The three-box design is staying the same, and they're dropping the
Just
designs.
Explain the three-box design.
So, small rectangle in the front. The way you used to draw a car when you were in kindergarten.
Oh, yeah.
Small box, rectangle in the front, rectangle at the back, square in the middle. Three boxes. It's that...
Three box design. Okay.
Now this one is a 2.5 box design. Okay. So it looks weird, and it messes with our perception of
what is normal.
What is normal for these vehicles. Yeah. Things like the i3, you could just basically have a plastic bubble because that's all you need for that car. But they still make it in a three-box design because that's what people are used to. Yeah. And they're not going to buy something that offends their sense of normality.
Well, I must say, I don't know if I agree with you with this X4's blob of a screen parked on the dash. Does that thing retract?
No, and it's exactly the same in almost all your BMWs are going to have that iDrive screen.
Mm. It kind of looks.
But what's
like
really nice,
but maybe it's the dash behind it that's the problem. Mm. It's just not styled for that particular screen. It just doesn't look.
Even the gear knob, though, it looks like it's the old design language. It doesn't look like it's the new.
Mm, yeah, because the new stuff is this weird crystal.
Yeah. And the infotainment system is also a lot.
It's
on the new ones.
Standard iDrive.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that BMW does very well. And it's something that I hope that most manufacturers will begin incorporating in the near future. It's gesture control.
Mm.
You want to skip the song? Wave your hand. There's sensors in the roof and in the dash and everything. It picks up your hand movement and it skips the song. You want to turn up the volume? You just turn your...
Don't get road rage, in other words.
Or you a fly comes
in. It has happened. I was talking to my wife and I was being very, very Italian with my hand. And it skipped the track. It changed to a radio station. You can,
for
just
those.
By gesturing in the air, it turns the volume up and down. You can skip tracks by... Awesome piece of kit, and I really do hope that and things like wireless CarPlay make it into other vehicles as well.
Well, you know what? Here's the trouble, is that every single car, cell phones have really converged. Most of the gestures are very similar amongst different mobile phones, and you can find your way around. What I'm hoping is that a similar thing will happen with cars, is that the way in which we interact with car will converge. You're going to have this waving gesture to skip a song in the BMW, and you go and get into a VW and you do the same gesture and the door opens then, so.
Now, VW in the new Golf 8, surprisingly enough, also has gesture control, but it still requires your hand to be within a certain distance of the screen. Where with the BMW, it's just in the middle of nowhere. It's in fresh
air. So if you have kids in there, it's just a...
And it only works in the front.
A disco, okay. Yeah.
In a certain zone just above the gear selector.
Stop moving!
This is my song.
This is my song. So what does this go for? What are we going to set back?
The base price is 1.14. But the one that I had a couple of optional extras fitted to it. So I would say it's probably about 1.24, 1.29, thereabouts. And like I said, once again, if it wasn't for the way it looked on the outside, I would say spot on.
Spot on car.
There are things like the GLE.
Yeah, GLE.
The GLE, which comes close. Same problem, though.
Yeah.
Coupe styling on a four-door car just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the BMW X4 M40D. I would gladly take this as a long-termer from BMW, if you're listening.
Okay, well, there you go, BMW X4, and thank you, Lawrence. Appreciate the review. And if you want to go and have a look at the more detailed version of that review on the BMW X4 M40D, go and have a look at autotrader.co.za/cars/reviews, or just navigate to the homepage, and you'll be able to get to the news and reviews part of the site. Go and read it for yourself. Make up your own mind. Obviously, Lawrence is an expert journalist.
I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't. You would. You wouldn't.
Everybody's fallible.
Everybody's fallible, but you do this for a living. Nonetheless, go and make up your own mind, because the more people that go and make up their mind, the more the public will vote with their wallets. That's the main thing, and that's what it comes down to, right? Well, I said to you right at the beginning that I've got the BMW i3. And
I've been waiting the whole week to find out how your week has been with that i3. Because when I tested the i3, I had the Rex, which is the range extender, which is the one that had a small little petrol engine in it, so you don't have to worry about range anxiety. If it runs out of petrol, it just runs on the engine and then charges the battery.
Well, let me tell you.
No, you don't have that.
I don't have that problem. or opportunity. But I got into this car on Friday, and BMW kindly delivered it to our office on Friday, and it sat in the basement for a couple of hours before I went downstairs and got into the car. And the first thing I wanted to do was obviously attach my cell phone to the car, and I didn't know that it had Apple CarPlay, which I was delighted about when I got into the car. So I sat there for about 10 minutes and figured out how to connect the car, how the car worked, and the gentleman that dropped it off, he wanted to go through all the bells and whistles with me and teach me how the car operated. And I said to him, no, I want to see how hard it is to use this car. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to these electric cars, they're going to be like mobile phones. You know, you don't get an instruction booklet or somebody deliver the thing and say, oh, well, this is how you use it. Push this button, push that button. You've got to figure out for yourself. So got into the car, and surprisingly, within a couple of minutes, I knew how to use that car. I knew where everything was. And the funny thing is, you push the start-stop button, and nothing happens.
Is the lights turn on?
What do you mean it's nothing happens?
Nothing happens.
There's no noise.
Just the lights come on. There's nothing.
Yes. The aircon.
The aircon begins. You know what? That was one of the best features of this car, is that you don't have to have a motor running for the aircon to work.
Oh.
And I still want to have a look inside to see how this air conditioner actually works, because it's
an electric pump.
It's an electric pump, exactly. But I can't hear any belt turning. I can't hear any pistons pumping. It's
creepy, isn't it?
It's very creepy. Absolutely, absolutely silent. So you put this thing in that's got a little turny thingy on the top of the steering wheel. And you turn it to drive or reverse, forward or backwards. That's it. When you put your foot down on this BMW i3's accelerator, it...
like a cat with mustard on its butt.
Unbelievable. Mm. It's responsive beyond belief. It goes like a rocket. Yes, it does 0 to 100 in 8 seconds, but that 8 seconds feels like 3.
Mm. Absolutely. And then you take your foot off the accelerator and it goes...
You do not need to use the brake pedal on this i3. Mm. You take your foot off the accelerator, like Lauren says, and it begins to brake. You don't need to use the brake pedal. I mean, I reckon on these electric cars, brakes are going to last an incredibly long time. You just got to get used to it. I mean, yeah. I pulled in at where we live at the boom and to put my fingerprint, and I would usually coast into the boom with a petrol engine car. I didn't need to coast. Well, first of all, I stopped about 5 meters before the before the flipping fingerprint thing, because the car just stopped and I was expecting it to coast. But very quickly, within one drive,
you pick it up.
I'd already mastered how to use that accelerator without using the brake. No doubt I drove it in sport mode most of the time because it's zippy and quick. And interior of the car, didn't notice this till Friday night, as a matter of fact. And that is, it is electric blue inside when the lights go on at night, which looks like Tron. Mm. That little car looks like a little Tron car. I'm almost considering getting one, to be honest.
Go for it. Absolutely.
I mean, the problem is the range. So that was my only downside, is I watched that battery on the way from... the car was fully charged by the time I got to my office, I wouldn't say full, because I had obviously driven it there. It was on about 98%, 99%. When I got home, the car was on 93%.
That's not bad.
Still had 200Ks to go. But it seems to base the range on your driving style.
Yeah. So if you put it in sport mode and zip everywhere, it chars the battery.
Yeah. So
does it change? Like when it says 93%, does it change?
No, the percentage doesn't change, but the range changes.
I see.
So the percentage will consistently come down, but your range will change. So on the way home, by the time I got home, it was 93%. It was over 200Ks still left in the battery, according to my driving style. And then I drove it on the weekend. And because I was town driving, I charged it overnight on Friday. Saturday, I drove it, and because it was zipping around and it was pretty quick, a robot to robot, also got to about 93%, but this time there was 180Ks to go.
Mm.
So it was taking my driving style and the town driving into account, and dropped the amount of mileage I could do. But no range anxiety, none of that stuff.
Did you have to change your driving style at all?
Just with the accelerator, like Lauren says.
Okay.
So you got to get used to that automatic braking when you take your foot off. So what you tend to begin doing is you tend to simulate a regular petrol engine car by leaving your foot on the accelerator slightly. But it also, you know what it teaches you to do? It teaches you to manage that battery, because you know you don't have to use the brake. So so what you do is you end up driving to a traffic light a lot slower. I can't say I pulled away a lot slower, but you end up driving towards the back of another car a lot slower. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant car. I would recommend it in a heartbeat, an absolute heartbeat.
Now, the i8, it's exactly the same. It's just a whole lot faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's got a hybrid engine, right?
It does have a hybrid. Yeah. So you can hear it's a new brake.
You can, with a flick of the switch,
turn it
go into full electric. Yeah. And you can leave it in full electric.
Wow. So I'm impressed. I'm absolutely impressed. Over 200 kilometers in range, getting from A to B. I wouldn't recommend it right now for long distance driving, because I can see how it could give you range anxiety when charges in South Africa are only at the moment 200 kilometers apart. So if you had to take a car that can only do about 230 k's in range, and if you stamp on that accelerator too much, you're not going to get your 230 kilometers in range. You may just make it to the charging point, and if you don't, you're in trouble. And if you do, it's going to take you a while to charge it. Now, what I want to do is I want to drive it this week, and I'll let you know next time. I want to drive it this week, and I want to deplete the battery. So I didn't get a chance to deplete the battery over the weekend. I want to deplete the battery. I want to charge it tonight, tomorrow night. I want to see how that goes.
Yeah.
To see whether I can drive on one full charge the entire week to work and back.
What about in the city? Like, is there charging points spread around the city? Because I know if you're going on a long trip, yeah, there's points. But
well, BMW gave me a card which allows you to go to any BMW dealership and charge the car. So you can. I'm assuming they've got fast chargers there. I'm not sure.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm assuming they've got fast chargers, which means you could sit there, have a cup of coffee, and charge the car. So I may just do that if I run out of. For another range, yeah, and it's got the BMW app, which I didn't download because you've got to own the car to attach and register and all that stuff. So I didn't download the app, so I can't tell you about the application. But I am very impressed with this BMW i3. I'm more impressed now that I've driven it than what I was before I've driven it, and I love its color. It's black and white.
Now, the i3 times by 50. And you get the Jaguar I-Pace, uh-huh, which arrives tomorrow.
Ah, lovely.
So there will be a massively impressive video about the I-Pace coming soon.
Oh, I can't wait for the days of electric. That's all I can say. I honestly don't know why petrol heads are hanging on to this antiquated technology.
Because it sounds good.
Because there are those
there
amongst
us. There is nothing like crickets in that car.
there are those amongst us who want it. We want the instant torque and the speed and everything, but we can't have it yet because of...
It's expensive.
Yeah, it's price. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I would seriously go to BMW, go and test drive the i3. If you are on the fence about electric cars, just do yourself a favor. Don't take my word for it. I'm in love with the i3 right now. Not as much as I'm in love with the Tesla, but BMW i3 has just come in at a close second. Do yourself a favor and go and test drive the BMW. You won't be sorry, I promise you. And that gets us into our industry talk segment. And, well, what is happening to the future of car ownership?
You tell us.
Woe betide. Everybody.
I'm about to.
Nobody is buying cars anymore. Millennials want to ride bicycles and catch electric buses. Boo hoo hoo.
Catch electric buses.
Yes, there is a certain segment of the population who does not want to own a car.
Well,
and they will ride a bus and their electric scooter to and from work with their Starbucks, and yay, hey, hey.
Can you blame them?
But there are still those amongst us who will own a car, regardless of whether it's electric or hydrogen powered or powered by old dinosaurs. It doesn't matter.
Well, the analogy of a lot of people make is that the smartphone is to a teenager today what car keys were to a 16-year-old 10 years ago. That's the current analogy. And in the University of Michigan in 2017 conducted a piece of research, and only one quarter of 16-year-old Americans had a driver's license, which was down around half in 1983, which means that from half to a quarter, from 1983 to 2017, it shows you there's a trend, and these young people don't care about driving. They just don't.
Yeah. Look, if you take in consideration what you get for, if you take public transport, it's so available now.
But it's always been available in America.
That's true, yep. But now you have to pay for your tires, you have to pay for service,
and now
they
have things like Uber and Lyft.
I'll say it again, it's always been available in America.
Not here, and that's why.
But
here, it's still a rite of passage to get your driver's license, and it's still the aspiration to have your own car, because
I don't know.
You can sleep in your car, but you can't drive a house.
I don't know about that, because I was recently in Cape Town visiting some friends, and legit, everybody there Ubers. We hired a car,
because
and we ended up just
Cape
Ubering
Town.
Everywhere.
Well, you're 24, so you're squarely in the upper end of that demographic.
lower end.
But legit, I think I can understand why this is the case. It's easier to just firstly just take out your smartphone, get the car here, take it there. You have no liability with regards to what happens to this vehicle. And if you had a night out, you can just do whatever you want essentially, and not have to worry about driving home.
Well, I don't know if it's even about the night out. I just think these kids of today and the adults of tomorrow just don't care about driving. That all they care about is getting from A to B. That's all they care about. And the more comfortable they can do that, the better.
So it's like a chore to them.
It's a chore.
Yeah.
It seems to be a chore. It seems to be a mission to actually, well, why should I drive this thing?
I can tell you, in all honesty, 80% of the people sitting in traffic on the ring road around Johannesburg would rather be anywhere else
in traffic
than behind the wheel of their car. Yeah. And it doesn't matter whether it's the ring road traffic, or it's on an off-ramp, or it's in suburbia.
Yeah.
They would rather be anywhere else than behind the wheel of a car. Those of us who are motoring enthusiasts, who love cars, will always prioritize driving and having a license and having a car as the most important thing.
Yeah, but that's because of where we find ourselves in terms of how we grew up, whereas these kids are not growing up in that particular era.
So what does that mean for the automotive industry then? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, we still need transportation. There's no doubt about we still need to get from A to B. We've always needed to get from A to B. And, before cars, there were horses. Before horses, there was walking. But we've always needed to get from A to B. So there's always going to be this transportation. We're just going to, I think, get into a world where there are electric cars that last longer, that drive themselves, and less of them bought and sold.
So between now and then, there is going to be a significant dip in car sales.
Yes, there has to be.
People buying into cars. They will, as soon as we get to that point where cars are able to talk to infrastructure and themselves and pilot around and drive, and you could say, hey, Alexa, take me home.
Yeah.
Between now and then, there is going to be a dip.
But I think it might even
switch
hands.
There will be, but once we get to the point where people's laziness is taken into account, and they can say, hey, Alexa, take me home.
I think it's on the chance.
They will buy that car because it can do that.
Yeah.
Then there will be an uptick again, because now people will say, oh, having a car that takes you home is now a status symbol.
Mm. I don't think people are going to be buying cars. I think these companies like Lyft and Uber are going to completely change their business plans to offer, I guess, like public transport that's more accessible than it is currently, where you don't even... like a BMW won't be selling to, a George or a Lawrence, but rather to a Lyft or to an Uber instead.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen in the future exactly, because I'm not Nostradamus and I don't have a crystal ball. But it seems to be going the route of self-driving cars, electric cars that last, for lack of a better word, forever, and kids don't care about driving. It's an exciting world, if you ask me. But that brings us to the story of Tesla shares surge as an unexpected unexpected profit surprises all the skeptics. You know what I don't understand is, as soon as a company is a startup and does incredibly well, everyone else wants it to die.
Yeah, because it's a threat.
Why? I mean, it's good. It's good for everybody. It's good for the entire world. So shares rose nearly 21% after the company posted a cash balance increase of $5.3 billion, 77 billion rand. How'd you like to have that in your bank? The carmaker reported a profit of one rand. If it was 1 rand, they wouldn't be reporting on this. $1.86 per share, shattering analyst expectations of a loss of 42 US cents per share. The third quarter results are an important milestone for Tesla in the redemption of the chief executive, Elon Musk. Because if you remember, he got kicked off the board as chairman because of his antics. And it now puts the investors' doubts
to bed.
Back and yeah. to bed around Tesla's ability to withstand competition from larger, better capitalized global rivals. There is nothing on this planet like a Tesla.
It's not going anywhere, I think.
It's not going anywhere, and the naysayers can bash it all they like.
If they bashed Apple as well.
Exactly. And this company is another Apple, if you ask me. That's my opinion. But it's not going anywhere, and good on Tesla. They're disrupting the current model, and now they've proven it with the thing that counts, I guess, and that is profit.
And he's South African.
Money talks.
And he's South African. Yes, money talks.
We'll claim him.
Exactly. Well, that kind of gets us into our next segment, which is our Grid Talk segment. And we have our only and one and only one dealer, Sisher, who is here to tell us about a very exciting race of yesterday's Formula One. Go ahead.
So I was busy having this conversation with you earlier. So Mexico always wins in terms of experience, and in terms of a race, it's always the most exciting after the break. And this time did not hold any punches back. We got drama, we got excitement, and we got racing, like proper racing.
It started and flat spotted tires,
definitely. But qualifiers, if you just Max Verstappen was supposed to get the treble, and his pole time was the best, but unfortunately because he ignored some yellow flags, he got demoted. So the top three cars coming into the race were the cars of Vettel, Leclerc, and Hamilton. Then Sunday came, the race came, and drama once again. We had wheel-to-wheel racing. We had so many incidences in the first turn. But once again, you can't say anything anymore. Once again, we saw Mercedes come through with the strategy that essentially made Hamilton, put one hand on the trophy for the season.
I take my hat off to Hamilton. I've said all along, I haven't once been emotional about the fact that Hamilton has his head screwed on. They do not have the fastest car.
Nope.
They absolutely do not have the fastest car.
Nope.
But they won the race. They've won the Constructors' Championship, and I think that Hamilton's going to win the Drivers' Championship.
Yeah.
It's just one or two races away.
4 points behind, right?
4 points behind. The only way that he's not going to win that championship is if Bottas beats him.
In every race.
In every solitary race.
And he doesn't finish the remaining races of the season.
Exactly.
He just needs 4 points.
He just needs 4 points, and he'll get there. So so chances are, I think he's gonna win it, and let's not blow the wind out of Formula One yet. How many races are left, Wally?
We have three races left. Next race, we're going to the USA.
Then
Brazil, and then finally in Dubai. But just to summarize what happened in the race, so second place was Vettel, and I think he did extremely well to get that position, and then Bottas in third. But I want to specifically highlight Albon again. This is the third show of my life.
Well, since our last discussion on Albon, I was watching Albon this weekend.
My boy kid.
That kid is the future.
I was impressed.
Definitely.
Max better watch his back.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Max is great.
Temperamental.
But I think he's temperamental. Yeah. You know who I was impressed with over the weekend and last race and the race before is Vettel, there's a different man there.
Definitely.
Definitely a different guy there.
He's matched Leclerc on podiums now, so you can't really take it away from him anymore. He's now on level field, and we were kind of worried about him in the beginning, but you can totally see that his head is back in the game. And hey, I think Charles now needs to be worried if his seat is safe.
Because Charles is becoming a little bit emotional, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So how did the race end up? And you were talking about before the show. You were talking about the car at the podium.
Yeah. So every single year, Mexico tries to top what they did the previous year. Last year they won for best experiential for fans, and this year they decided to essentially let the car park into a garage and raise it up. With Hamilton standing on the car, and there was fireworks, and everyone was going crazy.
Mexicans do it bigger every time.
Yeah, it's the
Formula One car coming up out of the ground onto the top step of the podium with the driver standing on top of it with like
and second place and third place just looking on like I missed out. That could have been me. Yeah,
incredible. Do you think that if I recall the last two laps of that race?
Yeah,
and particularly the last lap,
Vettel
caught Hamilton. Now maybe Hamilton backed off a little bit, but Vettel caught Hamilton by almost a second.
Yeah. Well, Hamilton was nursing his tires from the 23rd lap to the 71st.
Do you think that if Vettel had pushed should have pushed a little bit harder, maybe he could have stood a chance? I think he pushed hard too late.
If we had one more lap, we could have potentially seen a different story.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it goes down to that strategy. We got really lucky as Mercedes fans. I think. Really, really lucky. There's no way those tires should have lasted that long. But once again, we had a driver.
Everybody was in that boat, right? Yeah. So I don't know if luck was part of it. I mean, I'm not a Mercedes-Benz or a Hamilton a supporter, but I'm not anti him either. I think they're brilliant strategists, and I think Hamilton has his head screwed on.
Yeah, I mean, you could hear him, early on talking about, are these tires going to make it there? And the fact that his race engineer was not there for this race. Shows the sort of temperament that he has and the calm that he can keep under pressure. And he always thinks about the team first. So
let's talk a second about our friend old Daniel Ricciardo and his little bit of a late-breaking incident on, I think it was Perez. His late-breaking incident on Perez and then flying off the circuit, off the track, and then having to give the place back to Perez. Now, their little disqualification with their brake balance or their brake bias software and predicting the track's abilities,
braking zones,
and predicting the braking zones that the car should go through on every single track. Wasn't that evidence that Ricciardo had gotten used to that technology and then suddenly got it wrong?
So here's the thing, right? This technology, this braking bias system, if you look at the history of Formula One for the last 3 years, it's something that Renault has been using for about 4 years now. It was, let's be honest, it is a driving aid, and you're not allowed driving aids, so I can completely understand.
Isn't the steering wheel a driving aid?
I mean, it's a necessary driving aid. but I think maybe he was a little bit reliant on it, because you could see it right there that he needed to brake. And the car was not assisting him, essentially, in that braking zone. And he collided with Perez. To say that it goes hand in hand, I'm not sure, because...
We're heading into speculation territory.
I'm not sure if you can directly say this is...
The track was very slick.
Yeah. No, the track was very slick. But, I know that Ricciardo brakes late. And, that's why they call him the last of the late breakers.
Yeah.
And the fact that he tried that and got it incredibly wrong means, to me, he was used to something that was there the week before, right?
I don't know. We'll never know.
So, let's wait. When is the next race? The USA? And is that next weekend?
So USA is on the 1st of November, so that's this coming week. The weekend starts then. The race is on the 3rd of November.
Another back-to-back.
Another back-to-back, yeah. We are in Central America. So, yeah, I'm super excited. It's a good race. Lots of excitement. America goes big every year, so you can expect the FIA and the F1 to just go crazy. And Hamilton loves it there, so... you can just wait for something to happen. His head might not be there, so who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. Well, let's see if he wins. But that's it for our show for this week. People, catch you in 2 weeks' time, and ciao for now. CliffCentral.com.